So, think about this for a second. What if the coding languages you spent, the last year furiously trying to learn are already as obsolete as churning your own butter?
I mean, that is the exact anxiety so many people are feeling right now.
Right, because keeping up with AI lately feels like trying to drink from a fire hose. There's just constant news about new models, massive layoffs, the tech landscape shifting overnight.
And as a learner, your biggest fear is that the skills you're pouring all this energy into today are just going to be completely useless tomorrow.
Exactly. Which is why today's deep dive is so crucial. We're looking at this phenomenal synthesis-style blog post from March 2026 titled My AI Thesis.
And what I love about this source is that the author isn't just, some armchair observer throwing out hot takes on social
No,
media.
not at all. They've built six different AI products in a single year, and they've worked deep in the trenches of GPU infrastructure financing.
Yeah, they've actually seen the underlying code and the billions of dollars moving around behind the scenes.
So our mission for this deep dive is to map out their unified framework. We are going to connect the death of coding as we know it, this exploding demand for massive compute power, and how you can capitalize on this rapidly closing phenomenon they call the Centaur window.
It's a really ambitious piece because it treats all these isolated news stories as interconnected gears in one massive economic engine.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the core premise here demands a total paradigm shift. Basically, the era of software as a durable asset is over.
Yeah, that's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of engineers.
I mean, building software used to be like constructing a brick house, right?
Right.
You spend months pouring the foundation, laying every brick perfectly. It was a permanent asset.
Right.
But now, thanks to AI agents, building software is more like pitching a cheap pop-up tent.
That's a great way to put it. The author actually shares this perfect anecdote to illustrate that
Oh, the
mechanism.
scheduling tool story?
Yeah. So they had this completely non-technical team member who needed a complex social media scheduling tool. And instead of filing a Jira ticket and waiting weeks for engineering,
They just built themselves in a single afternoon.
exactly, using Claude code, this person just described their workflow in plain English. And the crazy part is, when the agent produced a version that had bug,
They didn't even have to debug the code, right?
no, they didn't even look at the code. They just told the agent in English what went wrong, and the agent just rewrote the entire architecture on the fly.
So if code is just this cheap, disposable thing you can pop up and tear down in an afternoon,
Yeah.
the million-dollar question is, what actually retains value?
What's fascinating here is that the author identifies the new defensible moat, and it isn't a piece of technology at all. It's something they call cognition.
Okay, let's define that, because I feel like they're using that word a bit differently than, say, a neuroscientist would.
Right, yeah. In this framework, cognition is the accumulated high-fidelity understanding that an AI builds of a specific person over months of continuous interaction.
So it's not just knowing your name or your schedule.
No, it's way deeper. It maps your decision-making patterns. It learns your specific emotional triggers during high-stress projects.
Wow.
It figures out your communication preferences and all those tiny nuanced contextual signals that make up how you specifically approach a problem.
So for the listener, imagine having a totally bespoke executive assistant who knows your exact thought process inside and out.
And this level of hyper-personalization used to be reserved for Fortune 500 CEOs. But now it's becoming an affordable subscription product for you.
But to get that, you have to hand over an incredibly invasive amount of personal data,
Right.
right? You're giving this system your late-night drafts, your deleted
The
emails.
exact cadence of your frustration when things go wrong. Yeah.
That is wild.
But that data exchange is exactly why it's such a powerful moat. You cannot just copy-paste a 3-month relationship history.
Right, because
Yeah.
it's live context.
Exactly. You can't compress that into a single prompt, and a competitor can't just train a shortcut to replicate it. Model weights, user interfaces, a rival startup can clone those in weeks.
But the relationship itself becomes the actual product.
Precisely. And when personalized cognition is the product, it fundamentally rewires market demand. The source identifies three massive demand curves colliding right now.
All of them hungry for the exact same underlying resource.
Yes. And the first of those curves is corporate demand.
Right, the corporate curve. The author points out that the era of headcount as a vanity metric is completely dead.
Oh, totally. For a long time in Silicon Valley, managing a division of 500 engineers gave you way more prestige than managing a lean team of 50.
But the author notes their current three-person team is literally doing the work of 15 to 20 senior developers.
And I mean, the math on that is just brutal for CFOs.
Let's run those numbers. An enterprise-grade AI software seat costs, what, $100 to $200 a month?
Around there, yeah.
While a fully loaded employee factoring in salary, benefits, office space, is costing anywhere from $8,000 to $15,000 a month.
Right, so if that AI tool can handle even 30% of what that employee used to do, it pays for itself almost instantly.
Which explains the massive cultural fallout we're seeing. Meta is cutting headcount round after round.
And the definitive death of Apple's old 10-to-3 coasting culture.
Oh, man. Yeah. The days of showing up late and over-engineering speculative projects are finished when AI agents are executing tasks around the clock.
Exactly. Which pushes us right into the second demand curve, which is the creator curve. The author calls this the printing press moment for software.
I love that analogy because before Gutenberg, making one book took a whole monastery of monks copying pages by hand.
Right, and the printing press shifted the bottleneck. Suddenly, the hard part wasn't the physical production of the book, it was actually having an idea worth distributing.
And that is exactly what's happening to the SaaS industry right now. Those traditional software as a service moats are collapsing.
Completely.
Yeah.
Because individuals can now solve their own niche workflow problems without paying premium software margins.
If a creator has a highly specific problem, something too small for a big tech company to care about, they just prompt an agent and boom, they have a custom disposable app.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We've got corporate efficiency, we've got independent creators, but the third curve is the mass market.
And the author makes a really brilliant distinction here. This isn't just about handing consumers a slightly smarter chatbot.
No, pure chat interfaces have a structural ceiling. A text box on a screen is fundamentally one-dimensional.
So what's the missing dimension?
Ambient reality. Space. The future requires wearables that actually observe your physical reality.
Like smart glasses or audio pins.
Exactly. The source gives this super poignant example. Think about the emotional difference between a piece of software that sends a push notification asking, "How are you?"
Which is just a scheduled survey.
Right. Versus a wearable device that observes you working late, notes your elevated heart rate for 3 nights in a row, and speaks up to say, "You look exhausted."
Wow. Yeah, one is self-reported data, and the other is genuine empathy based on observation.
And as a knowledge worker, a creator, and a consumer, you are likely part of all three of these demand curves at the exact same time.
Which just massively compounds the pressure on the market. And all three of these curves are crashing headfirst into a single terrifying bottleneck.
Compute. Mm.
But I have to push back on the economics of this a little bit.
Okay, let's hear it.
The source provides some jaw-dropping numbers on how cheap this intelligence is actually getting.
Right.
In 2023, high-quality output cost roughly $30 per million tokens.
Right.
But today, comparable quality is under $1. That is a 97% cost drop in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So if costs are plummeting that fast, shouldn't total spending by these tech companies be dropping too?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is a flawless, modern example of the Jevons paradox.
The Jevons paradox. Remind me, that's the 19th century coal thing, right?
Exactly. William Stanley Jevons noticed that when steam engines were made vastly more efficient, total coal consumption didn't decrease. It skyrocketed.
Oh, right, because the engines got so cheap to run that factory owners just found completely new ways to use them everywhere.
Bingo. Cheaper tokens mean an absolute explosion in usage. At $30 a million tokens, you only use AI for critical tasks.
But at under a dollar, you have an AI draft every single email, summarize every meeting, review every line of code.
Exactly. And furthermore, a late 2025 Deloitte report confirmed that inference now consumes significantly more global compute power than training.
Let's separate those two for a second. Training is the initial building of the model's brain, which is a massive one-time $100 million expense.
Right. But inference is what happens every single time a user actually sends a prompt to that brain.
And when you're using agents, like the ones we talked about earlier, building disposable code, they use something called compound inference.
Yeah. And this is crucial. A standard chatbot is one inference call. But an autonomous agent spawns subagents, writes code, verifies the results, corrects errors.
So one request triggers hundreds of inference calls.
Exactly. So training is a one-time expense, but these agents running compound inference burn compute forever.
Which brings us to the physical reality of what they call the Silicon War. Because to fuel that forever-burning engine, companies have to build massive data centers.
And the hardware reality here is fascinating. Everyone assumes NVIDIA's moat is just making the best physical silicon chips.
But the author points out it's actually their software layer, right? CUDA.
Yes, CUDA. It's the cultural and educational ecosystem that literally every engineer uses to talk to those chips.
So even if someone builds a faster chip, the switching cost for developers to learn a new hardware language is just too high.
Exactly. Though Google is playing a very different game with their TPUs, their tensor processing units.
Right, because TPUs are custom designed just for matrix math.
Which makes them incredibly efficient for running current transformer models.
Yeah.
But they are highly inflexible. It's a game really only Google-sized entities can play at scale.
Whereas standard GPUs are flexible, but the hidden cost is the networking overhead.
Oh, the networking overhead is brutal. The author notes that for every dollar a company spends on GPUs, they spend another dollar to $1.50 just on infrastructure.
The massive cooling systems, the power delivery, the high bandwidth cables.
Yeah, the chip itself is almost the cheapest part.
So with billions pouring into this inference compute, the battleground really shifts to how big tech is maneuvering to capture all this value.
Right. The landscape is shifting incredibly fast.
Let's do a quick scorecard of the tech giants as of early 2026. Start with Anthropic.
Anthropic's trajectory is wild. They laser focused on enterprise return on investment.
And it paid off.
Massively. They saw their annual recurring revenue explode from roughly $1 billion to $19 billion in about a year.
And 80% of that is enterprise.
Right, right.
Focus is totally their strategy. What about Google?
Google is the major comeback story here. Sergey Brin's return to the engineering trenches really injected a sense of urgency.
Yeah, Gemini 3 Flash is genuinely highly competitive.
Well, when you combine their unbelievable distribution channels, the cost advantage of their TPUs, and the original talent that invented Transformers, it's a terrifying combination.
Definitely. Now, contrast that with OpenAI, who the author critiques pretty heavily.
Yeah, OpenAI was really struggling with what the source calls a side quest problem.
Right, getting distracted by consumer hardware, ad models, video generation.
They were losing their strategic discipline.
Yeah.
But reportedly, Sam Altman had to forcibly refocus the entire organization back onto enterprise productivity.
Which leaves Meta.
Meta is in a tough spot with execution. They've been pretty quiet since Llama 4, and they are actively losing top-tier engineers to VC-funded startups.
Well, they still have Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp.
Exactly. Their sheer distribution keeps them in the game as the ultimate safety net.
Okay, so while big tech fights this capital-intensive war over data centers and developers, what is the everyday knowledge worker supposed to do right now?
Well, the source points at a really tragic irony happening in the labor market today. The narrative of AI replacing workers is actually causing more economic damage right now than the tech itself.
Because CEOs are just reading hype headlines and prematurely cutting their teams by 40%.
Yes. And then operational reality hits. They find out the AI can only reliably do 30% of the work without human oversight.
Leaving the remaining employees totally burned out trying to manage the AI and cover for their laid-off coworkers.
It's a disaster. But that said, the long-term trajectory of the technology is relentless.
So what does this all mean? How do you survive this?
The author introduces this concept of the centaur window.
A centaur being like half human, half AI.
Right. It's this roughly 2 to 3 year window we're in right now, basically 2026 to 2027, where a human actively collaborating with AI drastically outperforms either a human alone or an AI alone.
This is where we get the concept of the super individual.
Exactly. A solo operator using agent teams to run an entire company's engineering, marketing, and operations all by themselves.
But if technical execution, the actual coding and building, is becoming a cheap commodity, what is your defensible moat as a human?
The author argues your ultimate moat is taste.
Taste. Like editorial judgment.
Yes. It's the wisdom to know which specific problems are actually worth solving. When an AI generates 5 different architectural solutions, human taste is knowing which one aligns with actual human needs.
It's coupling that editorial judgment with trust, positioning, and distribution. Because building the product is the easy part now. Getting people to trust it is the real bottleneck.
Exactly.
Wow. We have covered incredible ground today. We started with the realization that code is now just disposable utility like a pop-up tent.
We explored how deep personalized cognition is the new non-replicable asset.
And we tracked how those corporate creator and mass market demand curves are all crashing into the compute bottleneck.
Right, which is driving billions into compound inference.
But the biggest, most actionable takeaway for the listener right now is to realize that compute is currently heavily subsidized by venture capital.
Oh, absolutely. The author estimates that these AI tools are delivering 40 to 50 times the value in raw API costs compared to what you're actually paying for a subscription.
It's the Uber era pricing model all over again.
Yeah.
Remember when ride sharing was artificially cheap because VC money was absorbing all the losses?
Exactly. So the directive is to take full advantage of this venture capital subsidy while it lasts.
Use this cheap, abundant intelligence during the Centaur window to rapidly build your human moat of distribution and trust.
But I do want to leave you with one final lingering question to mull over.
Oh, lay it on us.
So the source firmly argues that human taste and editorial judgment are our final moats, right?
Right.
But think back to those ambient wearable AI companions we discussed, the ones perfectly mapping our emotional triggers and anticipating our needs.
Yeah.
Well, how long until we start outsourcing our taste to them as well?
Oh, wow. If the AI learns what we like and what the market likes better than we know it ourselves, does that final human moat eventually disappear entirely?
That is deeply unsettling. If the AI becomes the ultimate arbiter of human taste, then even the super individual might find themselves out of a job.
It's definitely something to think about.
It really is. Well, thanks for diving deep with us today. Keep learning, keep refining your taste, and we will catch you on the next one.